And now, Virgin Most Powerful Radio is pleased to present Hands-On Apologetics with renowned Catholic author and apologist, Gary Matuta.
And welcome, everybody, Hands-On Apologetics. I'm Gary Matuta, and you have entered into Virgin Most Powerful's Apologetics Dojo, where we learn how to throw down error and basically train so that we can be instruments in the hand of the Lord to explain, defend, share the faith with clarity, charity, confidence, and a lot of fun, because there's nothing more fun, I think, in life than explain the faith and clearing up errors and helping people to see the beauty of Christ and his church. So it's every day. I get pumped up because, you know, the dojo is my favorite time to, kind of dive into this, review material, talk to some great people, and also get to chat with you. Got a great show. Catholic Brian Mercier is going to join us. We're going to be talking. Well, actually, we're going to continue our rapid-fire session of answering common objections. You remember Brian was on last time. And we had all sorts of really cool questions, common questions that's thrown out. And Brian was knocking them out of the park. So God willing, we're going to be doing the same thing this program. Have some really, I think, very common and sometimes difficult objections to answer. So Brian Mercier is going to join us. And we're going to work through those questions together. And I also want to give my shout out to those watching live stream on Facebook, YouTube. Hello, everybody. Thank you very much. Michelle, I like your sheep emoji explosion. Very nice. And I also want to thank all of you listening on Catholic Radio in the United States and outside the United States. Welcome aboard, everybody. And, you know, I want to encourage everyone to please keep us in your prayers at Virgin Most Powerful Radio. You know, this is a ministry that that we'd like to partner with you, and so we're praying for you. Please pray for us. Also, please share us on social media. Let people know about, you know, anything cool that you hear on the show. Let them know, because you know, the more the merrier, and you know, the more people in the dojo, you know, the more we have defenders of the faith who are equipped to go out there and share the good news. So please share us on social media and tell your friends and pray for us. And of course, you know, financial donations are also very much appreciated. Just need to throw that out there as well. Every episode we jump into our critical thinking skills. And today we have the finding the fallacy of the furtive fallacy, which is really cool. This is one of those fallacies I think everybody out there knows and has encountered, but didn't know it had a name. So we're going to dive into that. Also, we meet one of the early church fathers, and today is a very early one. And he is unknown. We don't know who it is, but we do have a writing from him, and that is the letter to Dionysius. So, or Dionysius, I should say, not Dionysius. Very interesting stuff. In fact, I wanted to have some quotes from it, but there's just so much cool material from that particular document. It's going to be tough for me to choose. So I will just leave it in the Lord's hands. We'll see what we get to before the first break. And on the other side of the break, when our guest, Catholic Brian, joins us, give us a call if you have a question. 888-526-2151. That's 888-526-2151. And also, I should mention this too. I know many of you know this, but maybe you don't. Maybe you're listening to us on our Virgin Most Powerful phone app, or maybe you go to the website or you watch it on social media, but you can get all the shows on Virgin Most Powerful, including Hands-On Apologetics, via podcast at our flagship website, which is virginmostpowerfulradio.org. So all one word, just type that in, go to our shows, select Hands-On Apologetics, and you have a plethora of programming material from all sorts of awesome apologists from around the country. So great resource, folks. Not only avail yourself of it, but share it with others, too. If you like a particular show, let people know. Share the link. We'd appreciate it. All right, so why don't we jump into our critical thinking skills, shall we? Let's sharpen our intellects with the finding the fallacy, which is the furtive fallacy. And what is the furtive fallacy? Well, it's an informal fallacy of emphasis, say it right, Gary, in which outcomes are asserted to have been caused by the hidden misconduct or wrongdoing of decision makers. Now, this actually comes from Wikipedia. I generally don't like Wikipedia, but sometimes they have decent definitions, and I think that is a great definition. It also says that it is more than just a conspiracy theory, because in conspiracy theories, you kind of postulate, well, where are the motives? Maybe there's some bad motives going on. But unlike that, this actually insists that they are there and they do occur. So there's been lots of groups that have, this has been their bread and butter. It has been the furtive fallacy, their whole cause of existence. You know, whenever I run into an example of furtive fallacy, immediately I think of this track called Trail of Blood. Is a track that was put out by a Baptist successionist. Now, these are Baptists who try to historically trace their roots of their beliefs from, you know, the 1500s when Baptists or Anabaptists came on the scene all the way back to the apostles. And they do this basically by skipping from one heresy to another backwards in time. And it's funny because many of those aren't even Christians. But anyhow, The question comes up, well, if there was all these Baptist successionists in the early centuries, how is it that we don't have any writings from them? How is it that no one ever talks about them? And the answer is, well, it's because the evil, conniving Catholic Church had burned and destroyed everything. So it's really, you know, this hidden misconduct, wrongdoing that's responsible for any counter evidence being absent. And I think that is the furtive fallacy in spades. So that's our finding of fallacy for today, the furtive fallacy. Let's move on to the early church father for today. And like I said, it's an anonymous author of the letter of to Diognetus. It's an apologetic work in the form of a letter to a high dignitary among the pagans, one Diognetus. Now, while it may well be that the letter is addressed to a particular person, it's very likely that there wasn't a Diognetus, that this was just a pseudonym. In other words, it kind of dressed up the apology as if it's appealing to some dignitary. And, you know, Jurgen's Faith, the Early Fathers, from which we get these segments from, says there's no space in the present work to consider the multitude of theories respecting the identity of the author, the identity of the addressee, or even the date of composition, because all of these are kind of up in the air. It is quite possible, although it can't be demonstrated, that this letter may have been to addressed originally to the Emperor Hadrian, or which would make it roughly around 125 AD, 200 to 125 AD. Generally, scholars will put that it could be as early as 150, 125, 200, somewhere in that area. But it's nevertheless, it's a very early document. And let's see. Like I said, there's so many great little bits in here. Okay, I'm going to try to read two. I don't know if I could do it in time, but let's give it a shot. This is from the letter Diognetus, chapter 6. It said, to put it briefly, what the soul is to the body that the Christians are in the world, the soul is spread throughout all the parts of the body, and Christians through all cities of the world. The soul dwells in the body, but is not of the body. Christians dwell in the world, but they are not of the world. The soul is invisible, but it is sheathed in visible body. Christians are seen, for they are in the world, but the religion remains invisible. Love that quote. You know, it's not super heavy-duty apologetic material, but I just love what it says. So let's read a little bit some more super heavy apologetic material in chapter 7. Yeah, I think I could do this in a couple of minutes before the break. All right. Letter Dionysus, chapter 7, says this: "It was truly the almighty, all-creating, invisible God himself who established among men the truth of heaven and the holy and from the holy and incomprehensible word, and set him firmly in their hearts. Nor did he do this contrary to as one may suppose, by sending to men some minister, or an angel, or a ruler, or one who was in charge of earthly things, or one who was entrusted with the administration of heavenly things. No, he sent the very designer and creator of the universe himself. Through him, he had made the heavens, and by whom he enclosed the sea within its boundaries, whose mystery all the elements of nature faithfully guard, from whom the sun has received the schedule of its daily flight, whose command the moon obeys in lighting up the night, to whom the stars give heed in following the path of the moon, by whom all things were ordered and bounded and placed in subjection, the heavens and the things in the heavens, the earth and the things on the earth, the sea and the things in the sea, fire, air, and the abyss, the things in the heights, the things in the depths, the things between. Yes, he it was that he sent to men." But did he send them, as one supposed, as a despot, or in fear or terror? Not so. Rather, gentleness and meekness he sent them, as a king sending his son. He sent him as king. He sent him as God. Great passage. Letter Dionysus and Dionysus. I keep saying that wrong. Coming up on the other side of the break, Catholic Brian Mercier joins us. We're going to answer common objections. Stay tuned, everybody.
Welcome to our January 11th, 2020 Spiritual Warfare Conference. Every year without fail, this is our most popular, well-attended event. This year's Spiritual Warfare Conference will host Adam Bly, a Catholic demonologist and an auxiliary member of the International Association of Exorcists, along with Dr. Luis Sandoval, a psychiatrist who's part of the Healing, Deliverance, and Exorcism team for the Diocese of Orange. These two gentlemen bring tons of experience and expertise in the area of spiritual warfare. This is going to be a high-information Catholic seminar. I'll be there as well, sharing some riveting stories on the diabolical and liberation found through Jesus Christ from my best-selling book, The Devil in the City of Angels. Mark your calendars, come and join us, and meet other radio hosts from Jesus 911. Contrary to popular belief, spiritual warfare is not demon-centered. It's Christ-centered. Come join us and learn how to armor up and fight the good fight of faith. Catholics, wake up. Don't hit the snooze button. Join us at St. Christopher Catholic Church, 629 South Glendora Avenue, Escovina, California, on January 11, 2020. See you then. Strength and honor in Jesus' name.
In Luke 7, Jesus said, "I tell you, her many sins have been forgiven her, because she has been shown great love." According to St. John of the Cross, Christians should always remember that the value of their good works is not based on number and excellence. Their value is based on the love for God that prompts them to do the works. May we always be motivated by true love for God and not worry so much about what we do, but why we do it.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
Welcome back, everybody. Hands-On Apologetics. Well, yeah, all of us get hit by objections from all sorts of different angles, by our separated brothers and sisters, and it's important for us to have a good explanation to give them, you know, as to what exactly do we believe as Catholics and why the objection may even be wrong. So to help us work through this material, we have Master Apologist Catholic Brian Mercier with us. Brian Mercier is a professional Catholic speaker. He's a retreat leader, author, and Catholic apologist. He's spoken to countless teen adults over the 20 years and has done numerous confirmation retreats, parish missions, key talks. He's been on Catholic media, TV, radio, and not only on EWTN in the United States, but also in Ireland. And Brian, welcome to Hands-On Apologetics.
Thank you so much, Gary.
You know, I always have to shorten your bio because you've done so much over the years. I mean, I think it would take up almost all of our segments to go through it all.
Maybe I should give it a shorter bio.
Just the guy who has done everything. Just put it that way. Yeah. So, I really enjoyed the last time you were on the show because it was kind of like a rapid fire. You know, here's some common objections. How does Catholic Brian, how would he answer them? And you were hitting them out of the park consistently. So I know it's going to continue today. So I've been looking forward to this segment. By the way, how have you been?
I have been very well. And in fact, my wife is expecting our first baby in 3 weeks. So we are super excited here.
Awesome. Wow. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Another potentially budding apologist, you know, in your clan.
Exactly. We can't wait for that. But overall, we're doing well. How are you doing?
Beautiful. Well, we're doing good. We're hanging in there. You know, fall's coming. I love fall. It's my favorite season. And being in Michigan, we get that. Of course, sometimes it's only a week long. Sometimes it's longer.
It's actually my birthday next week, so I love fall for that reason, too.
Wow. Boy, so your birthday and your newborn might be pretty close together.
Pretty close, yes.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. Well, you know, happy birthday in advance.
Thank you.
Yeah, you know, maybe we should start with why do we celebrate birthdays, but that's probably, we can save that for the Jehovah Witness segment that we'll do sometime in the future.
Yes.
But, yeah, okay, well, why don't I start pitching you some fastballs, and let's see how you would handle it. And the first one, actually, this is something that I've received from some of my, I'll just say family, you know, wider family members. Some of them have fallen away from the faith. And the reason they left the church was there's too many rules. That's all Catholicism is rules, rules, rules. And, you know, how could Jesus have started a religion and expect us to follow a religion of rules?
I know. It's really unbelievable. I mean, for 2,000 years, all the Catholic Church has done is make rules. I mean, how could people possibly live up to it all? Of course, that's tongue in cheek. But there's a couple of ways that I usually respond to this, Gary. And the first one is, well, how many rules are too many? How many rules are there and how many should there be? Let's start there. Because that's a very generic statement. There's too many rules. And the fact is we follow rules all the time. I mean, someone could submit that we follow too many rules in our country. Why do I have to stop at red lights? Why can't I beat my wife? You know, and there's many rules that we follow every single day. And there's actually a lot of them. I mean, just traffic laws alone, there's a lot, but there's a reason for the rules. There's a reason for the laws. The reason is to keep us safe, is to keep an orderly society, and it's to help bring about the well-being of people in general. And it's the same thing with God. God isn't giving us a bunch of rules just to chain us down, just to keep us at bay. I mean, atheists virtually make the same argument, don't they? There's too many rules in religion. Well, Protestants and other religions just, you know, put that onto Catholicism. There's too many rules. Well, I don't find that there's too many rules because the Catholic Church isn't the one who makes these rules. And I think that's an important point. It's God who originally made these commandments. He's the one who originally made these laws. And the Catholic Church is the one who's just upheld the laws and the rules for 2,000 years. Someone once described it as like the Ten Commandments, for example. Someone once described it as a guardrail going down a dangerous mountain. You don't have to follow them, but at the the very least, that guardrail is there to keep you on the path and to keep you safe, to keep you on the path to heaven. And so it's the same thing with any and all rules that you might find in the church. I think part of the problem is that we've got into feel-good Christianity. We have tens of thousands of denominations who all have been invented by different men at different times in history and teach different things. And these men, in a sense, become their own, well, we'll call them popes, who have to decide for themselves what the Bible means. And they come up with their own rules for each church. But how do we know that those are correct? Why should we follow that set of rules versus another set of rules? I think we want to avoid minimal Christianity, you know, only following what we feel comfortable with, because Christ, he set up a lot of commandments and a lot of rules, not to be a jerk, but to make sure that we love God and love one another. And in fact, I don't need rules, Gary, for my wife. I don't beat her. I don't swear at her. I don't cheat on her. I don't need these rules. The rules are only there when we want to break them. And the people who don't like the rules usually are the ones who want to break them.
Yeah, that's true. You know, I always think when somebody gives this objection, I wonder if they're a parent. Because anyone who has had kids knows that the kids are always saying, all these rules, why do we have to follow all these rules? Well, it's just like you said, you know, it's they're there for your safety. It's there for a cohesion, you know, and it's true for everything, too. You can't get around rules, can you?
No, you can't. It's absolutely true. And in fact, I was just creating a video saying, since I'm going to be a father, I've been thinking in terms of fatherhood. And I've been thinking, parents, how would you like your kids to never talk to you again, to run out of your house and have nothing to do with you, to never talk to you and never visit, barely even think of you? And yet that's the reality of when we stop praying and when we stop going to church and following the church, because God's our father. And when we walk away from him through prayer, when we walk away from him by stopping and going to church and not visiting him anymore, it breaks his heart. And so I think you bring up a great point that there's a very symbiotic relationship, or you could call it a synonymous relationship, between parenthood on earth and parenthood in heaven. They're virtually the same thing, because our parenthood derives from God's ultimate fatherhood.
Yeah, very good. Very good. Yeah, you know, I always kind of cringe when I heard this commercial. I'm not going to say who it is, but maybe you've heard it where I say, no rules, just right. And, you know, I always go, ooh, you know, that's kind of scary to go in a restaurant where there's no rules. You know, and the only rule is that it's right. You know, hopefully they have rules about refrigeration, you know, preparation, things like that. But great job. Yeah, that one's out of the park for sure. How about this one? And I think it's still around. I know it was popular several years ago. I'm sure it's probably just as popular today. Is the church is corrupt and it's too rich? And why doesn't the church just give all their money to the poor? You know, why does it have to have all these cathedrals and expensive things and churches when they could be feeding the hungry?
Yes, I would agree with you that one was definitely floating around in excess a few years ago. And I definitely still hear it a lot in social media today and in person, because quite frankly, I think this is just one of many excuses that people bring up so that they don't have to, quote, go to church or follow God, or they can be spiritual and try to follow Jesus in their own way. But it doesn't work that way. These are all straw man arguments. For starters, the church is not too rich. Kind of like, how many rules are there? There's too many rules. Well, how many how many is too many? How rich is too rich? I mean, is the Catholic Church too rich? How much money does the Catholic Church have? Most of the money that the church has is not in cash. They can't just hand it out to the poor. The majority of the Catholic Church's supposed wealth is all in land and art, kind of like the museum at the Vatican. I mean, that's a lot of money to make, and there's a lot of expensive artwork there and statues and different things like that. But the Catholic Church, in a sense, can't just go give that away. Yeah. Moreover, I think what people don't understand is that the Catholic Church, St. Peter's Basilica, the Vatican Museum, all of these beautiful things, they don't belong to the Pope. They're not his to give away. They belong to the entire church around the world, like you and me, Gary. They're part of our church. So we have every right to go there and visit them, to see the beauty that reflects God. Many homeless people are actually sheltered in these churches. Many homeless people are actually taken in. In fact, the Pope sometimes has large breakfasts and large dinners where they invite hundreds of homeless people and they feed them and they give them showers and they clothe them. And here's the real reality of the situation is that the Catholic Church has been the largest charitable organization in the world. In other words, the Catholic Church feeds more people, clothes more people, educates more people, and does more good for people than any and all other churches on the face of the earth. So even if the claim is true that the Catholic Church is extremely rich, the Catholic Church does more good with her money and more good with her charity than any other organization on earth. So that's good. I mean, shouldn't we want more wealth? All the saints and all financial people said the more wealth you have, the more you can put it into the church, the more you can put it into charity, the more you can put it into evangelization projects and reaching people for Christ. And that's not a bad thing. It only becomes a bad thing when we start worshiping it and using it for our own selfish purposes. But here's a little fact that most people don't know. The Vatican is in debt almost every year. It's in the red, which proves that the Catholic Church is not too rich because they can't even pay their own bills. And in fact, if you look at the majority of Catholic churches in America, they are also in the red. They're struggling to survive, and it's not about money. And the money we do have, most times we give it to the poor.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's usually makes headlines when the Vatican actually has a profit. It's almost always in the red. Fantastic point, too, about that. I know lots of people have this misconception that the Pope is like he owns all the property. He has a control of all the assets. But he's kind of like a person who is in charge of a museum. You know, they might have the purse strings, but they don't have the authority to, you know, get rid of everything that they own, you know, liquidate the assets of a museum. They're entrusted. That's their job, is to preserve and, like you said, share it with people.
Exactly. And that could be said for anything. Someone who's in charge of an estate, someone who's in charge of a museum, they're just in charge of it. This Pope, he doesn't own it because there's going to be another Pope and another Pope and another Pope. And really, it belongs to the church. It's us. You know, so one lady said, well, the church should sell all that beautiful artwork and give it to the poor. They're not helping the poor. I said, sure, maybe we will. Right after you sell all your house, all your belongings and everything you own, maybe the Catholic Church will follow suit if you set the example. In other words, stop telling everyone else to sell everything they own if you're not willing to do the same thing.
Great. All right. So we're chatting with Master Apologist Catholic Brian Mercier about answering common objections. We got a lot more common objections coming up on the other side of the break. You're listening to Hands-On Apologetics, and we will be right back. Stay tuned.
Welcome, Daniel. You're on the line. What's on your mind, brother?
Hi, I just wanted to share a testimony about Virgin Most Powerful Radio. I had a buddy at work who, you know, he's a lukewarm Catholic guy, and I wanted him to start listening to the Terry and Jesse show, so I kept telling him to download the app, and he kept putting me off. So one day, I grabbed his phone, and I downloaded the app for him. I went on vacation, and you know, I kept telling him to listen to it. He was kind of put me off. I came back from vacation. He comes to my cubicle and he says to me, hey, man, I've been listening to Terry and Justin's show and it's great. And it's made a big impact in his life. The guy, he's going to weekly adoration a couple times a week. He goes to the mass in the morning. Mm-hmm. He's an on-fire Catholic, and he promotes the Terry and Jesse show and the Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
Wow. Daniel, what a testimony. And I want to encourage our listeners to get those cards by going to virginmostpowerfulradio.org and do what Daniel's doing. Go out and spread the faith by inviting people to listen to Virgin Most Powerful. Daniel, thanks for your testimony, brother. God love you.
You're welcome.
This is Terry Barber. I want to invite you to take advantage of having your funeral or your loved one's funeral at the Sacred Heart Chapel in downtown Covina. It's a 115-year-old church. beautiful chapel. And all you got to do is call me at 661-972-7872, and I'll personally make the arrangements with your mortuary to have your funeral or your loved one's funeral here at Sacred Heart Chapel. You won't regret it. 661-972-7872. God love you.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
This is Jesse Romero. You're listening to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda on Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
And welcome back, everybody. And we're chatting with Master Apologist Brian Mercier about, you know, just answering common objections. And, you know, Brian, right before I give you another objection, why don't we talk a little bit about your videos on YouTube? Because you have remarkably popular videos that you go into, you know, some of short, some you go into depth, and, you know, they're fantastic material. How do people, how do they get in touch? How do they get the videos? How do they find out about you?
I'm sorry, Gary, something happened. Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Okay, yeah, I only could hear the first half of that sentence about the YouTube videos. Can you repeat
Tell
it,
us about the YouTube videos.
Sure. Tell me, go ahead.
You know, about your channel, what you do.
Sure. My channel is called Catholic Truth, and I make YouTube videos on everything regarding God, Jesus, the Catholic faith, and even other religions, love and relationships, how to pray and come closer to God. You name it, we talk about it. And in fact, one of the reasons I started it is because there's a lot of confusion in the Catholic Church today, and there's a lot of individual opinions. And really, our individual opinions don't mean anything because God's already given us the truth. And so anyone and everyone who wants to come to know what the Catholic Church actually believes and why can come to Catholic Truth, my YouTube channel, and discover why we believe what we believe in Catholic, as Catholics, and why it's awesome, why it's life-changing, and why it makes sense.
Yeah. Check it out, folks, because Brian does an awesome job, just like he's doing now. Enthusiastic, concise, and very insightful. So check it out. Okay, now let me throw out, this is, I think, by far the most popular of all objections that one will encounter today. And this is the I'm spiritual, not religious objection. You know, we don't need to follow commandments and doctrine. Jesus just told us to love. So, you know, I'm a loving person and I'm spiritual, but, you know, I don't need any of this religious stuff.
Yes, this is a very, very common belief today.
Yeah, it is.
And unfortunately, it's just not true. I mean, it's more of a fluffy puff, marshmallow, new age kind of spirituality where it's all about how you feel, but it's not about doctrine. It's not about rigorism. It's not about legalism or commandments or anything else. All honestly, Jesus said to just love. If you love, you know, do what you want. It's fine. All Jesus called us to do is to love. And I always say, could you quote the scripture on that, please, where Jesus said to just love? Because Jesus never said that anywhere, and the Bible never teaches that anywhere. Sure, love is the most important thing, but here's the thing we got to remember, that Jesus said the ultimate love was love for God. And the Bible says it multiple times, Matthew 19, 1 John chapter 2, verses 3 through 4, and many other places, it says that if you love God, you will follow his commandments. That's what it comes down to. If you love God, you will follow his commandments. See, love isn't just a morally relativistic feeling. It's not our own opinion on what we think it is. Love is something. And Jesus taught us what that love is. So Jesus, yeah, love is important. We must love God and we must love others. That's absolutely necessary. But in loving God, we actually have to follow God and his holy will and everything he said. Luke chapter 6 is a very scary chapter. It's the synonymous chapter with Matthew chapter 7. And Jesus says that not everybody who calls me Lord will go to heaven, but only those who do the will of my Father. In other words, only those who follow God's will and follow the commandments. Those are the people who are going to go to heaven, not people who just love. I mean, what does that even mean? Just love.
Yeah, right.
There's so many different definitions of love, from, you know, feeling, I feel this, I feel that. But love, true love, Jesus said, is loving God and his commandments and his will above all things. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. In fact, you know, if you don't have that, you could very easily fall into a kind of idolatry. And I've actually encountered this with some Catholics where they say, well, you know, you can just use your imagination and picture God like, you know, your favorite uncle or your favorite aunt, and you know, and love them, you know, love God like you would love them. And I was thinking, you know, it's God is not something we imagine. God is a real person, or, you know, three persons, actually, who right. told us, you know, who and what he is and what he expects. And yeah, if you just say, well, all we need is love, it's like, well, how do you know that you're actually loving God? And therefore, how do you know you're really loving your neighbor?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Jesus taught us what love is, didn't he, when he died on the cross for us.
Yeah.
And he also said, husbands, in Ephesians chapter 5, he said, husbands, love your wives as I love the church, and as he loved the church and laid down his life for the church. So in a sense, true love is a sacrificial love, where it's hard, where it's difficult, where you need to lay down your life, where you need to make the sacrifice, and many times do things that you don't feel like doing. That yeah. is the truest kind of love. And let's be honest, it's hard to pray sometimes. We're busy. We have a lot of things to do. We don't feel like it. We might be being tempted spiritually. We don't feel like going to church, perhaps. We might not feel like following a particular commandment. But when we do these things, despite how we feel, we're showing God we love him even more. And that's what love is. It's following the commandments. And there's a lot of priests out there today. You know, I could name a few, but you think of like Father Richard Rohr and some of these other priests, kind of new agey priests who promote more of a new age spirituality where, oh, there's too many doctrines. You know, there's no such thing as original sin. There's no such thing as this. There's no such thing. And they kind of make their own Catholicism. The Catholic Church and Jesus Christ himself have already proclaimed these things. Original sin is taught in the Bible multiple times, Galatians chapter 5, Romans chapter 5. Romans chapter 8. I mean, many times the Catholic Church has taught that original sin exists. So we can't just say, oh, well, I don't believe that. I'm just going to focus on love. Love is necessary for heaven. 1 Corinthians 13 teaches us that. But following God's will and following his commandments are also necessary for heaven. It's not either or, it's both and.
Yeah, yeah, excellent. Very good. Yeah, that's by far, I think, the most prevalent thing that we encounter, you know, not only outside the church, but also inside the church, too. It's amazing how it's basically the definition of cafeteria Catholicism. You know, it's like, I want to be spiritual, so I'll take this part of Catholicism and that part and the other things, you know, we could push aside.
It's not real Catholicism, Gary. It's, yeah. it's. I don't want to be mean. I'm not trying to be mean or judgmental here, but it's laziness. It's, or perhaps it's ignorance. Really, maybe they don't know better. They've never heard the Catholic faith put in a way that they, you know, could know. But the reality is it's more of a lazy spirituality where I become God. I choose what I follow. I choose what I want to do. And it all becomes about me. And that's not what religion is about.
Yeah.
We're not supposed to make religion in our image. It's supposed to be after God's image.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, that's a great way to put it. Okay, well, okay, let's since we move from the very broad objection, why don't we start hitting some of the powder kegs that are out there? And so luckily, I'm the one throwing the powder kegs. You're the one that has to dodge them. Let's see. How about this? The church is intolerant and doesn't accept people of same-sex attraction. How would you answer that?
I would say maybe some people in the Catholic Church don't accept people of same-sex attraction, but the Catholic Church herself absolutely 100% accepts everyone, even people of same-sex attraction. That's a fact. One girl came up to me once and she said, you're Catholic, right? And I said, yes. And she said, oh, so you hate. And then she stopped. And I don't know why, but I knew what she was going to say. So I filled in the blank and I said, gays. And she said, yes. And I said, no, I love everybody. Jesus, I follow Jesus Christ. And he taught me to love everybody the same. She's like, oh, but doesn't the Catholic Church hate? And I was like, gays. And she's like, yeah. And I was like, no, the Catholic Church loves homosexual oriented people. And, you know, in fact, the last Pope or two has put out an encyclical that says we must love and respect all people, including homosexual people. We must never bully them. We must never mistreat them. Reality, here's the reality. God doesn't look down on us as heterosexual and homosexual. He's not separating people like that. We've separated ourselves like that. And it's an injustice because we're not homosexual. We're not heterosexual. We're people who happen to have an orientation that is homosexual or heterosexual. So when God looks down on us, all he sees is my beautiful son and my beautiful daughter. He sees son and daughter. Now, that doesn't mean everything we do is correct. That doesn't mean all the choices we make are good or that please him. But what he sees in us as people, he loves. And that is the teaching of the Catholic Church, that God loves everyone. Now, I always say that I know one of my uncles was an alcoholic, and people I know are alcoholics, and I hate alcoholism because the person through alcoholism has caused many rifts in the family, and it's caused a lot of damage. So I don't like alcoholism, but I love more than anything in the world my uncle. And I think that's the way to see things, is that we might not agree with, you know, let's say, quote unquote, gay marriage, but we love the people themselves. We love homosexuals. We welcome them to the church and to the altar. And in fact, there's many people in the church that are homosexual and that serve God and that live lives of chastity and live lives of purity, just as priests and nuns do today. So I think the fact that people say that the Catholic Church doesn't accept homosexuals just isn't true. It's actually a misconception.
Yeah, I think implicit in that, and you touched on it too, is this idea of that you could reduce a person down to, you know, sexual orientation, as if, or using the alcohol analogy, that, oh, that's Uncle Bob, he's an alcoholic. Well, no, Uncle Bob is a man made in the image and likeness of God. You know, it's wrong to reduce people down to, you know, these kind of like narrow bands of behavior, when in fact, you know, it's really, yet we embrace them as the whole person, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I had this one guy come up to me once, and he's like, I was like, hi. He introduced himself to me. He said, hi, I'm John. I'm gay. And I said, hi, I'm Brian, and I'm French. I said, I was like, your gayness does not define you. That is not who you are. Think about this. Oh, we can take it up after the break.
Yeah. We're talking with Master Apologist Brian Mercier about answering common objections. We're getting to the explosive stuff, folks. You don't want to miss it. Stay tuned.
Have an exciting story for you to listen to, the story of John Pridmore. John Pridmore was a hitman for the gangs in East London.
I met some guys who seemed to have everything that I thought would make you happy. So I started working for these people. So to my shame, I was involved in vicious crime of all sorts.
He collected debts for the gangs. And if people didn't pay their debts, it was his job to kill them.
And as I drove home that night, I thought, what have I become that I could kill someone and not even care?
He was in the elevator on his way up to the 17th floor, and there was a 17-year-old young man in the elevator with him. Suddenly, this young man looked John right in the eye, and he said, Jesus loves you.
And I said the first prayer I'd ever said. I said, up to now, all I've done is take from you, God. Now I want to give.
Within a year, by the grace of God, John was able to get out of the gang and be freed from this road to hell that he had been walking on. Go to Virgin Most Powerful YouTube channel and listen to this story today.
Sirach 11:24 says, Do not say, I am self-sufficient. What harm can come to me now? According to St. Catherine of Siena, presumption is like vermin burrowing at the root of the tree of our soul. If we do not uproot it with great care and humility, it will eventually destroy the soul. May God keep us from all presumption of mind and heart, and realize that we depend on Him for everything.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Matuta. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
And welcome back, everybody. We're chatting with Brian Mercier of Catholic Brian, you know, at the video guy at the YouTube. And Brian, right before the break, you were just finishing your thoughts on, kind of reducing people's identities down to what they do rather than who they truly are.
Exactly. And I think that's an important point. And I told this kid, I was like, don't sell yourself short. You are not your sexuality. You are not reduced to your sexuality.
Yeah.
I'm French and German. That's not who I am. That's just a part of me. You know, I'm also skinny. I'm also heterosexual. I can name 100 different things about me as a person, but none of those things are me. I am me, and I am a child of God, beloved by God, and so are you. So I think it's a disservice when people operate in their sexuality. Think about it. If you say, I'm homosexual, and that's your identity, you're going to act a particular way as a homosexual, as opposed to if you operate in your identity as a child of God, you're going to operate in a whole different way that's completely different and probably, you know, at opposite ends of the spectrum. If you operate as a child of God who happens to have a homosexual orientation. In fact, the Catholic Church teaches a lot of people struggle in their relationship with God because they're homosexual. But the Catholic Church teaches it's not a sin just to be a homosexual. It's not a sin. And some people think it is. And they struggle in their relationship with God. But God loves you just as you are. It doesn't mean we can live that out. It doesn't mean that God accepts gay marriage or anything like that, but He loves us, you know, at the core bedrock of it. God loves us for who we are, and He calls us into relationship with Him. That is the bedrock truth.
Yeah, very good. Well, you brought it up. That was the next question. Why no gay marriage?
Well, because the Catholic Church is mean. I'm just kidding. The Catholic Church is not discriminating against persons of homosexuality. It's just that the Catholic Church does not think that, and it's truth. The Catholic Church knows the truth that that marriage cannot be redefined, because the Catholic Church did not make up marriage, and human beings did not make up marriage. God is the author of marriage, and He made it between a man and a woman who He commanded to be fruitful and multiply. In other words, love each other and have children. Both of those need to be necessary for marriage. Now, the Catholic, some people nowadays are saying, well, we should redefine that to include two people who truly love each other. I mean, why can't two people behind closed doors do whatever they want? Why can't they get married? And the question could be posed back to them, well, why can't three people get married, or five people, or 10 people? Why can't we redefine marriage to include 10 people who truly love each other, a man and his 9 wives? Someone will say, well, you can't truly love 9 people. the person who's loving, and even perhaps the wives, would disagree. And they would say, who are you to judge us about what our love is and isn't about? Who are you to say anything about what we do behind closed doors? And in fact, Gary, there's a movement in this country now that homosexual marriage is being legalized and has been legalized, that the polygamy and polyamorous loves are actually coming out and trying to get their so-called unions legalized. And someone might say, well, okay, well, that's maybe understandable, but another question could be posed, well, why don't we redefine it for two people who truly love each other of the same family? We call that incest. Some people call this a straw man argument, but who are you going to tell those two people who truly love each other, two cousins, let's say, how are you going to tell them not to love each other? What they do behind closed doors is none of your business. Can you see how all of the rhetoric could be used in any situation? In fact, there's many, many, many people in this country right now trying to get incestuous marriage legalized. And there's even people in this country trying to get animal marriage legalized. I mean, once we start to redefine marriage, where does it end? So the Catholic Church is not discriminating against homosexuals or two people who truly love each other. And I don't doubt for a minute that two homosexuals could love each other. I mean, I believe anybody can love. It's possible for anyone to love. But here's the thing. If we redefine marriage, the Catholic Church does not want to redefine marriage for two people who truly love each other, for three people or 10 people who truly love each other, for people who are in the same families who love each other, or for people and their animals. The bottom line is we can't redefine marriage for any situation. So we're not trying to single any individuals out. We just can't redefine marriage because God made it, and we do not have more authority than God.
Yeah, so it's actually a confession of humility, you know, that this is, I guess you could say, above our pay grade. You know, that this is how God ordered it, and it's kind of embedded in nature. So, yeah, very good. Well, hey, let's see. Here's one. I guess I put you on the hot seat. We could maybe do something perhaps not quite as explosive, but nevertheless could be. The church is against women and keeps them chained down. How about that objection?
Yeah, that's not explosive at all. Oh, well, yeah, that's a hot button topic. Yeah. No, I don't. I think it's a myth that the Catholic Church has kept women chained down. In order to say that, you would have to say that Jesus kept women chained down. But the opposite is actually true. Jesus went against societal norms and actually talked to women in public. He actually was kind to women. He actually evangelized to women. And the apostles even used women, talked to women, and used the testimony of women in their gospels. Now, back in the day, I mean, if you go to the Islamic religion, they really are in some ways against women. It takes, I believe, four women for every one man in the court of law. They hold the same amount of weight. You need four women to equal one man. It's not the same in the Catholic Church. And in fact, the Catholic Church is probably the church that started leading the way in exalting women and getting women rights and that sort of thing. Women were allowed to vote in the Middle Ages, if I'm not mistaken, in Catholic countries. And they were allowed to own property, and they were allowed to have leadership positions in the church, things that weren't even heard of in the ancient days and other cultures and in later days in many other religions. But the Catholic Church has given priority in large amount to women. Now, people will say that because they can't become priests, but the Catholic Church did not make up that rule. Jesus was the one who chose the 12 apostles for the priesthood. He's the one who chose an all malehood priesthood. And it's not a story or an example of qualifications, because women are equally qualified to do that. in as far as quality goes. I mean, look at the Bible. The women were the ones who were more faithful to Jesus. They were more faithful in their religion. They believed Jesus quicker. They went to the tomb and didn't run away. I mean, of all things in the world, it seems like God, Jesus should have picked women to be the priests, you know, because they were so faithful and the men were always running away. And that's the reality of it. But the thing is, Jesus chose, he knows what he's doing. He's God, and he chose 12 apostles. So again, it's a position of humility. The Catholic Church cannot change what God himself has ordained. But the Catholic Church has treated women highly throughout history, and he has even exalted a woman to the highest place in the church under God, and that is the Blessed Virgin Mary, who we believe is the Queen of Heaven and is the intercessor for us all to Jesus and under Jesus. And that's really a big priority. And if you look at it, Gary, this is my opinion on it, but women run most of the church. Sure, they can't be priests, but they run the religious education programs. They run the schools. They run a lot of the things behind the scenes. They even run a lot of the church sometimes because they're the secretaries and the priests just kind of follow suit. But the bottom line is, it's not keeping women chained down. It's just that Jesus chose men to be priests and we can't change that.
Yeah, I really think that's what's at the core, you know, of this, because everything you said is true. I mean, it's about the exaltation of women, the high place of women, even counterculturally, you know, things radically changed. But it really comes down to, well, women can't become priests. And like you said, it's almost like the question of marriage. God has already determined it, you know. But, you know, Brian, I think also we kind of think of the hierarchy as being like above the laity, when I think the biblical view is really that, and the church view is that the hierarchy is the servants. You know, it's the Pope being at the top of the hierarchy is the servant of servants, isn't he?
Exactly. Jesus himself said, he who wants to be the greatest leader among you must be the servant of everybody else. In other words, if you want to be high up in the church, you need to serve everybody. We don't want this lording it over everyone. And sure, there has been that in the church, but Jesus condemns that, and Jesus does not want that. Jesus himself wants us to serve each other. And that's why God said in the Bible that God created the male and female. He created us equal. And that's the way he wants it. Even in Paul's days, where he said, wives, obey your husbands. In that culture, women were so inferior to men, and men were definitely over their wives. And Paul wasn't advocating that. He was trying to fix it. You know, he's saying, okay, maybe you believe that wives have to be obedient to the husbands, but okay, husbands, you need to die for your wife and serve her with all of your heart, mind, and soul. So in some sense, he's bringing back that equality, and he's trying to make men and women equal again, to love each other, because God's original design was for men and women to be equal and to love each other in that equality.
Yeah, very good. Well, Brian, boy, I can't believe the hour has flown and we got so many more objections to go through. How can people get a hold of your stuff?
They can find me online at Catholic Brian, B-R-Y-A-N. That is my hashtag and where you can find me. And my Catholic YouTube channel is called Catholic Truth. So Catholic Brian or Catholic Truth.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, because, you know, as you can tell, Brian would be a great speaker, you know, retreat leader. He's got so many great tools that we should utilize. You know, and so check it out, Catholic Brian.
If I can say, if you don't mind me saying, Gary, I have a book. It's called Why Do You Believe in God? And it actually answers a lot of these questions and a lot of other questions as well. It's 15 real conversations that I've had with atheists, skeptics, and people who have left the Catholic Church. And it shows both sides, and you get to see why the Catholic view is the strongest and most logical view that there is out there.
Beautiful. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Gary.
All right. Catholic Brian Mercier, everybody. It just flies when you're having fun, and there's great material. Coming up tomorrow, we're going to have William Albrecht come into the dojo, and also Friday, Dr. Paul Thigpen's going to join us. We're going to talk about saints who battle Satan. So that was a fun, fun program indeed. Well, it's time for me to shut down the Midwest Command Center here and turn off the dojo lights. I want to thank everybody for joining us. Coming up next, High Impact Catholic Talk coming at you with the Terry and Jesse Show, the show that started it all here at Powerful Radio. I hope everybody has a great day, and God willing, we'll talk again tomorrow. Bye-bye, everybody.
In the 1990s, I lived and worked in Hollywood. But when my wife Betty's mom took ill, we relocated to Orange County. And it was during this time in our lives that I converted to Catholicism. Once my eyes were opened to the truth, I couldn't learn enough about the faith. But I had less free time than ever, especially with a long commute. That's when I discovered the real value of Catholic audio. Listening to cassette tapes transformed my daily commute into a miniature retreat. And that's the beauty of Virgin Most Powerful Radio today. Since the podcasts are archived, you can listen anytime on our smartphone app. I know how listening to Catholic audio can bring you closer to Christ and His Church. So I encourage you to visit the App Store or go to vmpr.org and download the app today. It just might change your life. I'm Matthew Arnold for Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
Virgin Most Powerful Radio, sharing the gospel with clarity and charity.